This episode brought to you by Beta Brand, the San Francisco-based source for crowdfunded clothing you can visit in person the next time you're in San Francisco, or stop by anytime online to shop bestsellers like dress pant yoga pants and now yoga jeans. And when you do, use the code SPIRIT20 to save 20% off anything on the site. For you designers out there, you can submit your own ideas and actually earn money when they become full-fledged Beta Brand products. We're big fans of the company, what they do, and we think you will be too. So check them out at betabrand.com. This episode also coming at you with support from Presto by Spirit of 608. It's the low-cost alternative to traditional PR and media outreach created by me after years of covering the business side of the fashion industry and getting really frustrated at seeing so many worthy brands miss out on coverage simply because they didn't have access to an expensive PR agency and they just didn't really know the ropes. So come over to pressdope.com, check out how we are supporting Fest Brands. It's a chance to work one-on-one with me and get access to a host of other tools and resources, including our daily media tasks calendar, highly targeted media contacts, and much, much more, all for a cost that's intentionally priced to run you in an entire year what you could easily expect to spend on just 1 month of PR agency retainer fees. So come check us out at pressdope.com. And now on to the show.
Spirit of
608. Wait.
Spirit of 608.
Hold on. Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Spirit of 608, episode 110.
You're listening to the Spirit of 608 podcast. I'm your host, Lorraine Sanders. Keep listening for stories, tips, and advice from women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. I call it FEST, and it's the future. Hey, hey, and welcome to episode 110. I don't know how that happened because I really feel like I was just like the other day dealing with episode 100, which I am so glad I am no longer dealing with because, I mean, I'm sure it won't feel this way or, you know, be apparent to you, but as listeners, but I mean, on my side, I just like fretted over it. And tangent news, I was listening to another podcast the other day and the guy that was hosting it, he was like, yeah, it's my 100th episode. Didn't do anything special. Who cares? Moving on. And I was like, ah, man, I should have done that. Anyway, did it. And now here we are 10 episodes later. Where does the time go? Speaking of time, I'm so grateful that you're willing to spend yours with me today and also with our fabulous episode guest. She is Liza Moiseva, a co-founder with Globin, whose monthly subscription boxes bring you highly curated selections of artisan-made products from around the world. Now, they're not limited to fashion. They range from home goods to accessories to bath and beauty products. There's all kinds of amazing things that you'll find in Globin boxes, but their ethos is very much aligned with Fest and what we talk about on the show. They are committed to fair trade. They only work with ethical artisans and suppliers. I'm a fan of what they do, and I have so enjoyed getting to know Liza over the course of the spring. She got in touch with me at one point after listening to a podcast and eventually became a Presto member, as well as an active member of the Spirit of 608 community and in our Facebook group as well. And she just is a really smart, energetic, go-getter type of woman, and I've loved getting to talk to her and learn more about her in the recent months. And one time when we were talking, I said, you know, I'd like to get you on the show. And she said, well, I love to share my marketing knowledge and I would love to share it with Fest Brands. And I thought, okay, this would be amazing to bring her on for our next knowledge drop episode because we've been bringing these out this year and I'm getting requests for more. And I've actually had people email me and say, okay, well, what other episodes do you have that level of training? And I thought, okay, got to get more in there. And Lisa just came along at exactly the right time. She, in addition to being a co-founder at Globin, is also their director of marketing. And is coming onto the show today, not only to tell us her story, which is really an interesting one, how she went from Russia to Silicon Valley by way of Virginia, all along focusing on impact investing and working with socially responsible companies. But we'll also be diving into how she has approached digital marketing and brand amplification for Globin. Now, digital marketing is a big word. It could mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. So let me break down a couple of things that are coming up ahead in our conversation. We'll be talking about Facebook advertising, so retargeting and building lookalike audiences and how Globin has approached that, who they've worked with, and how they evaluate performance of their ads. We'll be talking about their approach to influencer marketing, affiliate marketing, how they've worked with bloggers, and the tools Lisa uses to determine whether a blogger or an influencer is the right fit for a marketing partnership with Globin. Selfishly, I know I will just be eating up all the information in this episode. It's stuff that I want to look into. I've been thinking a lot more about digital marketing lately. So I know I'll be eating it up. I hope you will too. And another thing that you could eat right up, pineapple people. So I today was hopping over to our episode and show sponsor website, Betabrand, BetaBrand.com, as I do every time I'm working on my intros and outros and checking out the latest over on their e-commerce shop, because they're always coming out with new products because that's what they do. They crowdfund new ideas, sometimes crazy ideas, into production every week. And I saw this funny little like pineapple guy up at the top in the navigation. He's kind of like a pineapple robot, sort of, if you've ever kind of imagined something like that. You probably haven't. So of course, you know, I had to click on it. Like, you see a pineapple robot, what are you gonna do? You're gonna click. And I was taken to this kind of hilarious page where they've got like robotic Hawaiian dancing ladies, like the, you know, those little like tchotchke things you would see on somebody's dashboard of their car. Well, it's like that, but they're like robots from the waist up. Yeah, pretty freaking weird. But they are having a Hawaiian shirt machine promotion. And this isn't something that a lot of the ladies, you who are listeners, unless you're really into Hawaiian shirts, they're made for guys. You could wear them, but they're made for the guys. But still, I thought it was worth calling out just because I think it's kind of hilarious that they have a pineapple robot on their site. And there's also just weird, weird stuff like in their marketing images. If you've ever kind of wondered how to infuse flavor into your marketing for your website, this is worth checking out, whether or not you buy a shirt for a guy that seriously needs an extremely wildly patterned button down for summer, because they've got like hairless cats like poking out of the corner of the product shots. And I think there's a two-fingered sloth here. Also some screaming hops. So that is what I'm going to call your attention to this week. It is a smorgasbord of button-down, short-sleeve, crazy Hawaiian print shirts over at Betabrand.com, where you can always save 20% when you use the code SPIRIT20. So we're talking about button-downs. We're about to get buttoned up into the conversation with Lisa. Before I do, I know, I'm not supposed to do long intros, but I have to tell you, I'm really excited about the Renegade Craft Fair coming up at Fort Mason in San Francisco next week. Or no, it's this week. I'm recording this and it's coming up on the 15th and 16th. I'm getting my timing all messed up because I'm about to travel to the Bay Area for a couple of weeks. And this is happening the week that I get into town. And I'm so excited because, I mean, first of all, it's just a cool event. But second of all, I was looking at the website today to see who was going to be attending. And I'm like, oh my God, so many of my favorite festive brands and ladies are going to be there, including Echo and Air, Filbert, New Savant, Sarah Liller, also Hillary Williams, an artist whose work I have bought numerous times. I have her pieces all over my house, I feel like. So yeah, I'm just really excited. If you are thinking of attending or you're participating as an exhibitor and you want to get in touch, please feel free to reach out. Hello at spiritof608.com. Stick around. After the conversation with Lisa, I will be sharing the media outreach strategy that may very well be the most important one in the arsenal of a DIY PR and media relations practitioner. So stick around for that after the conversation with Lisa Moiseva of Globin. Lisa, welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Hi, Lorraine. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you on the show and talk to you and hear your story. And then also, because this is one of our special knowledge drop episodes where the guest brings an area of expertise onto the show for listeners. I know this is going to be a great one because we have that as well as your very interesting and very festive, like F-E-S-T, all caps, festive story to bring to the show. So thank you for being here and being willing to share everything that you know about digital marketing.
Of course. I really love sharing knowledge with anyone and especially, you know, the fest community. So yeah, I'm happy to share what I can.
Well, cool. Well, so before we get into all of that, and for listeners, just so you know what is up ahead, we will be talking about Lisa's take on digital marketing, how she's approached Facebook advertising, social influencer marketing, and lots of good stuff like that. And we're going to get really into detail with it. But first, I wanted to start off, Lisa, can you tell us what Globin does and how it's different from other companies out there and specifically other subscription box companies that we may have tried in the past?
Of course. Globin is a social business, and our mission is to empower artisans around the world through job creation and fair wages. And the main product that we have to help us on this mission is actually a monthly artisan box subscription. I think of it as Birchbox or maybe Stitch Fix, but most of our products are home decor and kitchen with a little bit of lifestyle, and everything is handmade and fair trade by artisans all over the world. Just to give you an idea, the artisan box experience. Every box has a theme, and the most popular theme is called cozy. So we have a hand-painted mug from Tunisia, a fair trade scarf from Thailand, fair trade cocoa powder from Ghana, and everything comes in hand-woven palm leaf baskets from Oaxaca, Mexico. And in Oaxaca, Mexico, we actually directly work with more than 50 artisans who weave beautiful palm leaf products for us. So yeah, that's artisan box in a nutshell. It's a monthly subscription, lots of options to choose your theme every month, to add on more products that kind of go together with the theme. We really thrive in curation, so Artisan Box is very much an experience. And every Artisan Box actually also comes with an artisan brochure, which is a mini booklet that we include. And inside the booklet, you will find photos of every artisan behind every product inside the box. So we really strive to make this personal connection between our customer and the artisan.
Okay, wonderful. So like other boxes we've seen, it's very much a discovery experience, but
yes,
you're saying it's also, you know, that every product you get has been made in a fair and socially responsible way. And not only do you know that, you're actually learning about the people and the origins of the products at the same time.
Correct. Yes. So we are just right now going through a Fair Trade Federation certification application, but we've been part of the community and the Fair Trade Federation membership for over a few years. And most of our partners are already Fair Trade certified, and every single organization that we source products from have to abide by the Fair Trade principles. So this is super important for us, and this kind of defines what kind of product we can include in the box. So yeah, the discovery, we love spotlighting smaller artisan brands, being kind of platform for them to reach their first customers. We love telling personal artisan stories and the impact behind the product.
Well, and on the impact note, I know from talking to you before that you recently just got back from a trip to Oaxaca, Mexico, where you met with many of your artisans. And I'd love to know what you learned on that trip, if there are any conclusions or takeaways that you think other Fest founders really need to hear about if they're thinking about fair trade or working with artisans.
Yeah, of course. It was a great experience. We have a country manager who is permanently located in Mexico and working very closely with our artisans there. My colleague has already been there, but for me personally, it was the first time I visited the artisans. So it was a really important process, kind of qualitatively. We always try to measure our impact at Globin, you know, like how many artisans we're employing, how much are we paying them, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, just to go there in person and seeing them, understand understanding their lifestyle, right? How they work together. It's totally different. Like, probably my favorite part of the visit was like always focusing on social impact. Let's get the metrics and numbers on social impact. That's what I'm asking, you know, our country manager there. But there's also this qualitative, very important aspect of impact there. For example, it's empowerment, right? Just pure empowerment. Very hard to measure. But our artisan coordinator, Marina, she was able to, you know, expand her house in Oaxaca there, right? Just through earnings with Globin. But most importantly, you know, she learned how to manage a team of 50 artisans herself, right? She doesn't have even a high school degree, right? But she came up to us willing to step up into this manager role, and she learned so much in the process. You know, she has like, she, even her personality changed a bit. She's truly like empowered woman. Another lady, we were working with her husband called palm leaf weaver called Don Juan, and for a couple of years now, and he's great artisan, he makes amazing products, but we never realized that his wife is very much a big part of his kind of artisanal business. And now she started coming to Globin meetings in Oaxaca by herself, right? And kind of stepping up in a bigger role with Globin project. So this empowerment stories, these two stories were like very important for me to see, you know, we don't really have numbers necessarily, but I could see this change in the way these women behave and how they see themselves.
That's pretty fascinating. And I mean, you're right. Empowerment is something that would be almost impossible to quantify with numbers, but it may very well be one of the most important pieces of partnering with artisans in this way. So it's very clear to me what the, you know, sort of ethical and sort of moral responsibility of a company that is doing work like yours is to go and pay attention to the social impact. Like, it makes a lot of sense to me why, as a company, you would go and be really invested in that, because it's aligned with your mission. But then from the business perspective, what is it about measuring social impact and tracking social impact when you can't measure it, you know, looking at the qualitative side of things? What's the business case for that with a company like Globin?
I think the first kind of the easy explanation is, like, you know, it's marketing. It's fair trade is, I think I've been discussing this with someone just recently. It's a, fair trade is pretty complex issue, right? There is some critical comments about it. You know, it doesn't make as much difference. There's tons of supporters. But overall, it's, as an idea, it's not that easy to understand, right? Like one for one, for example, it just really worked in terms of like marketing. It doesn't really create as much social impact as we hope, but it's like in customers' minds, it's really stuck. One for one, or like how much percentage you're donating of your profits to a charity. These people understand fair trade is a bit more complex. So we really, me as a marketer, I really have to work hard in terms of simplifying what fair trade is, what is our impact. And yeah, in order for it to really stick in people's minds, it has to be super, super simplistic. So that's why I'm so kind of adamant about putting numbers on our impact. Because even from customer interviews, I sometimes have like our conversations with our customers, and they tell me, I want to know, so for example, I purchased this basket. So how much with this one purchase, like can an artisan, for example, she put the money away to save up for her kids' education? Or for example, in Marina's case, right, no artisan coordinator in Oaxaca, she was saving up money to build a house. So we really need to tell this one personal story and explain to the customer how their money they're spending with us helped Marina build this one house. So very simplistic ideas that people can really relate to and understand easily. And I think that's kind of the main business case. And then there was also, for me, impact investing side. Are you familiar with impact investing?
Go ahead and give us your definition of it so everybody listening to the show will understand.
Sure. So impact investing, in a nutshell, it's investing for financial and social returns. So for example, I, as an impact investor, I would be investing in companies like Globin, but I would be tracking not just financial metrics. I would want Globin to be tracking and reporting social metrics. So as Globin, we're a social business, so we would be tracking how many artisans are we employing? How much money are we paying them? How many artisans, you know, out of the ones that we work with are going to colleges and things like that. So if we as a social business want to attract impact investors, we have to track these numbers. So that's the basic premise of it.
No, that makes every bit of sense in the world. And I just wanted to get that into the show because I think that it's really easy to sit around and talk about why all of this stuff is so wonderful from the human standpoint. But yeah. I mean, I believe for us to get farther along with changing businesses and growing more ethical businesses that you really have to have the business case there as well. And if it's not there, no one's going to be around in 10 years, right?
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I thank you for bringing that into the conversation. And so now we know a little bit about Globin, but we don't know much about you. How did you get involved in this? And, you know, as I was LinkedIn stalking you before the conversation, I saw that you actually went to college in Virginia, which is where I live now at Old Dominion University. So I would love to know, how did you get to Virginia and then from Virginia out to Silicon Valley, where you are now?
Sure. I'll try to cut the story a bit short, but essentially I came to US as a scholarship athlete. I swam for Old Dominion for 4 years when I was doing my bachelor program there. And my degree was in international studies. So from the very beginning, I always knew I want to be in a kind of a social impact sphere. I just didn't know where exactly in this industry I can create the most good, as I like to say. So I went through in my kind of mind, through my career, I went through different steps of, I want to work for UN. And then I realized that, you know, it's a little bit too much politics and not as much impact being created there. And then I went to pursue kind of career in the nonprofit international development sphere. And I worked for a microfinance network called the SIP Network, which is essentially like a knowledge hub for microfinance organizations all over the world. And in case somebody doesn't know, microfinance is essentially the idea that you can give microloans to the poorest people in the world and they will pay it back to you, and this will create a huge difference in their lives. You can give a microloan to start a small business or, you know, buy a sewing machine, whatever. But this tiny microloan can really make a difference for people who are living, you know, on less than $2 a day, for example. And then that's around that time I got to read this awesome book. It's called Creating a World Without Poverty by Muhammad Yunus. Muhammad Yunus is the father of microfinance. He founded Grameen Bank in Bangladesh and lifted helped lift a lot of people there out of poverty through microloans. And he also is one of the key people who kind of defined and coined the term social business, right? A business that's created not just for the purpose of making money, but also for the purpose of solving any given social problem. And coincidentally, my co-founders, they are also huge fans of microfinance and Muhammad Yunus specifically. So around this time, I went kind of on my own entrepreneurial endeavor and I started online community called Rus Innovator. Essentially, it was online community for Russian speaking social entrepreneurs. And whenever I would go to Moscow, which is where I'm from originally, Moscow, Russia, I would organize these meetups, which were super new back then. It was like 4 years ago. It's not six years ago it was. And my co-founders, Vlad and David, they actually came to one of my meetups. And yeah, we kind of clicked. Back then, the idea of Globin was almost formed. We were being officially founded. And we clicked and we started slowly working together on them, making Globin come true.
And was Globin something that you thought of? You said the idea had already been created. Where did the idea itself come from?
The idea of Globin actually came out of our personal travels. So my co-founders, they, you know, traveled a lot around the world and they noticed this artisan selling their beautiful crafts all over the world on the streets without actually being paid fair wages for them. A lot of artisans, they live in kind of a rural communities, not a big cities. So they can only sell to their community or travel a few hours back and forth to sell at the market. Or sometimes they have to go through middlemen. So the basic premise of Globin is like, let us be the platform for this rural remote artisans and so that we can enable this direct connection between customer and the artisan. And another part of inspiration came from Kiva microloans. Essentially, me or you, anyone here all over the world, we can give microloans to entrepreneurs, small entrepreneurs around the world to kind of help them start their businesses. And what we've noticed is that a lot of these entrepreneurs in developing countries were actually artisans who want to start their small businesses, which was great. You can help them jumpstart their small operation. But the problem is that, as I mentioned already, they don't have access to the global marketplace, right? So a lot of times they're restricted to be selling to their communities. So what Globin is, you know, we are providing this global platform to the artisans and giving them access to the global marketplace.
And then do you invest in them like one would through Kiva, or do you have a separate relationship with them?
No. It was just an inspiration. So yeah, Kiva was just a big inspiration for us. And we actually, Globino actually started as Etsy for developing countries. So we were literally, you know, we had like personal profiles of artisans and you can buy one of pieces from them directly. Again, like giving artisans connection to the global marketplace and customers kind of an ability to buy this unique products that they can't find anywhere else.
Okay, so that's really interesting. I always love hearing about companies switches and changes along the way. So it sounds like you started out with this Etsy for global artisans idea, but then now you're very much, I would say, closer to like a Birchbox.
Yes, we decided to try the subscription box just simply because it was such a big, you know, hit like 4 or 5 years ago. You know, that's around the time when Birchbox was starting and the subscription industry was really picking up. But we also realized that our customers actually prefer us to curate a kind of surprise box for them instead of buying individual products. So we started subscription box, and we also quickly realized that subscription box is very much more impactful for the artisans as well. Instead of ordering just a one-off product from them that they have to drop ship to the customer, we are placing huge orders, multiple, a few thousands of pieces that often provide like 3 months of work for a whole cooperative.
That's really fascinating. I mean, the business model itself is actually more impactful for them than another alternative might be. And it's what your customers want. I mean, that sounds like the ideal kind of sweet spot to hit.
Yes. And another advantage is that we are saving so much on shipping by placing these big orders. We're saving on shipping and we're able to provide kind of pass on the savings onto the customer as well.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about you and your role with Globin. I mean, I noticed that you sort of officially became a co-founder last year. Is that true?
Yep.
You've been with them for years, as you earlier in the conversation. So it's probably a lot of people listening out there who trying to figure out, how do I either find a co-founder, or I've been working at a company and maybe I'd like to have an elevated role. How did that work for you?
Yeah, I started working with Globin when I was still in Virginia, finishing my master's MBA. And then, yeah, I kind of gradually expanded my role. You know, I was doing social media, newsletter. Again, it's a startup. You know, we all do 5-10 different things, and customer service as well. And then eventually I was running the whole marketing operations, right? We're a small team, and essentially I was the marketing / salesperson / PR / business development. So yeah, that's how essentially we realized that I might be able to kind of have a bigger role in a company and be face of the company as well.
I love that. It's like so startup to start out and go, okay, well, I'm going to do your social media. And then a couple of years later, you're running all of the marketing. And I mean, it sounds like you, and this, we can kind of move into the digital marketing piece of our conversation here, but it seems like a perfect time to do that. But did you kind of teach yourself everything that you know about this sort of on the job?
Pretty much. Yeah, my bachelor's degree was in international studies. I did have right off after that, I did a few internships with nonprofits, like remote internships, where I did a lot of social media, online community marketing. In DC, I did kind of like social medias and online community management for this, the SIP network, which is a network for microfinance organizations. So that was my big learning experience. I was managing pretty big online social media community. And that's how I started, you know, Rusinnovator, that Russian online community. Kind of, I applied the knowledge that I got with the SIP network, right? I was like, okay, I have this knowledge. Why don't I do something useful in Russia? So I kind of jumped into social media right after my bachelor degree. And even though my MBA was focusing on, you know, impact investing and international finance, I was still very much always doing marketing like my whole career. And when I started doing like leading all marketing efforts in Globin, yeah, I realized that most of the stuff that I, you know, learned in college about marketing is not super applicable. You know, it's very basic. It gave me a good kind of structure in my mind of how marketing works and things like that. But the practical things, you know, working with affiliates, watching unboxing videos on YouTube, like, I've never even thought that I would be doing that, you know, as a marketer.
Yeah, well, and I would imagine today too, I mean, everything's changing so quickly.
Yes.
Even if what you had learned in school had been really applicable on a day-to-day sort of granular level, everything changes. I mean, every day there's some new tool out that I stumble across and think, wow, you know, that's really going to change the process that I have in place for this side or the other. Okay, well, let's get into some of what you do and what you've tried and what's worked well for Globin. I wanted to start out, you gave me a really cool, just so listeners know, Lisa gave me a really cool deck that she created that talks about how they sell and what channels they use and how they kind of make the decisions they do around digital marketing. So I'm going to use that as my guide here. And can we start out with the knowledge drop portion of the conversation and get into affiliate marketing a little bit? Can you tell us what that is and how you've used it in your company?
Sure. Affiliates, I think they're perfect for an online business. And the main reason is that it's a performance-based marketing tool, which essentially means is that you don't pay affiliates unless they drive you a sale, which is a startup dream. All startups have tiny marketing budgets, so it's very hard to justify kind of exploring a new marketing channel that requires you to pay like $1,000 flat fee. But affiliate marketing is not like that. It's the biggest advantage, I think, for startups to use it. And it's perfect for online businesses, and even more so, it really works for our business, which is a subscription business. Our first few sales, we drove purely through affiliates. And with subscription boxes, there is a whole kind of niche of subscription box reviewers, bloggers who really kind of know what they're talking about and drive very, very relevant traffic. So that worked really well for us. In affiliate marketing, you have to use kind of middleman platforms who will kind of connect you with affiliates and kind of do all the math and payments in the back end. We are using right now ShareASale platform as well as ImpactRadius, but there's a ton of other affiliate platforms. Amazon has one, a CJ affiliate, Rakuten. It just depends on your preference. And also some of these platforms require a bigger upfront setup fee than others. ShareASale, I think, is very reasonable. That's why we kind of went with it for the first time. And besides the subscription box reviewers, you know, affiliates can be anything. A YouTuber can join our affiliate program, a lifestyle, like what we call a mommy blogger. They can also join our affiliate program. And also there is a whole lot of deal sites, search marketing, or for example, I think there is also what's called publisher tools, which means essentially like big publications like BuzzFeed, you know, or Travel and Leisure. These online publications, they will be monetizing their content through affiliates. So even from PR standpoint, it's very good advantage to have affiliate program set up just so it makes more sense for bigger publications like BuzzFeed to, you know, link to your website so they can get paid through this.
Well, let me ask you about that. Okay, well, mm-hmm. Two things. One, I wanted to know, with your affiliate program, how picky are you about who you work with as an affiliate?
We have essentially an open affiliate program, and we can just like approve or disapprove if you can join or not. We're very open, unless you're doing some kind of scam, which sometimes happens. Anyone can try and sell our product, which is beneficial for us.
Okay, so you have sort of an open program. You see who wants to be a part of it, and yeah, then they can try. And I would assume if they do well, then that relationship grows with you in some way. When you're talking about these publishing platforms like a BuzzFeed, for example, mm-hmm. I mean, I know that so many people that are, you know, in the Spirit of 608 community and then in PressDope as well, I mean, they want to be featured in stories that appear on that site. And you're saying there's a way to maybe make that happen because the affiliate relationship. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So we had a few BuzzFeed features actually ourselves through our PR. But with BuzzFeed specifically, I think it's more kind of PR outreach than, you know, marketing. It's just that they do work with affiliates to monetize their content. Because, you know, we got such huge amount of clicks and sales from BuzzFeed that you can only imagine, you know, for example, a listicle of 20 different companies and every company gets like 100 sales, BuzzFeed gets really good money. So,
right, so they like to have, it's not that, because I've had bloggers explain this to me before, mm-hmm. say it's not that they're choosing their editorial content specifically because of the affiliate relationship, but they like to have an affiliate link in there if they decide to feature you because they like you. They still want to make the money from the mention, if that makes sense. right? I mean, that's
okay. Correct. And yeah, we, for example, our PR agency, they helped us kind of link up with the travel and leisure with their affiliate channel. I think like it depends, of course, on the publication, but anyone who's posting a lot of these listicles and gift guides, they will want to monetize their content. So you should be, at least that's the feedback that I got from our PR team, is that it's beneficial to be like on Amazon, for example, like Oprah Magazine, right? They're linked up with Amazon. So it's just, if you want to be an Oprah, at least be prepared and have an affiliate channel there established.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I've heard several publications and bloggers say, yeah, even if we just feature you editorially, if you have an affiliate link that you're willing to share with us, then we're more likely to continue to feature or continue mm-hmm. to promote that content over time because it returns value to them. And that is not the way media worked 10 or 15 years ago.
Yep.
So I think it's super important. So you'd recommend that any Fest founder listening tries to figure out a way to get an affiliate platform that they can use, so when these situations come up, they're able to share that information with bloggers or journalists writing about them.
Yeah, correct. I don't think you should do like all of them, but at least have one or two platforms. I think that's, you know, it's just to give people more incentive to share about you. So for example, with travel and leisure, essentially we established the connection, right? We have the proper platform that they're using. So essentially I feel like they have like a list of companies through that platform that, you know, whenever editors are making their posts, writing their posts, they kind of can pull from this list. It's like, oh, this company does home decor and we can get paid for it. So I will include them in that list.
Okay. So this is affiliate marketing. And then on the other, it's kind of slightly related, but slightly mm-hmm. different, influencer marketing, where yeah. you're actually going and I'm assuming in most cases paying bloggers, Instagrammers, vloggers directly for the mention. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you have worked with influencers and why you have chosen that, why it's been a good marketing strategy for Globin?
So influencer marketing, essentially it's marketing through social media influencers. It can be a blogger, an Instagrammer, blogger, or if you want to call them YouTuber, essentially any kind of social media personality. And I would say that it's not performance based, right? And it's usually requires an upfront fee. But as a small company, especially if you have an ethical aspect of your business, I think it's still possible to find what you call micro influencers or medium sized influencers who would be willing to work with you for free in only in exchange for product or for a very modest and reasonable fee. We started working with influencers, you know, besides the subscription box reviewers. Back in 2015, we actually started focusing on YouTube just because our product, you know, is so unique and the video really can explain it better than even the photos. So we had quite a good success there with YouTube marketing through influencers, where I would send a box to the influencer. Sometimes I would pay them a fee. Sometimes they can do it for free and they would unbox the box every month. Every month we release a new theme, so they would be unboxing a new theme every month. And that got us direct sales. But I think overall, and especially now as this kind of niche is becoming saturated, I think influencer marketing is first about brand awareness and then about direct sales.
Okay, so you think nowadays that if people are going to go and invest in influencer marketing. And by the way, I mean, I feel like a lot of the ethical and sustainable sites, oftentimes, like you said, are very, very reasonable. But you're saying you think that if people are going to go that route, they should be considering it more of a brand awareness play, not necessarily we're going to get a ton of conversion on this right out of the gate.
Correct. For example, with YouTube, you know, it's super easy to track. For us, it was, you know, you provide them a unique URL, you give them a unique coupon code, we could track the sales right away. With Instagram, as you know, it's much more difficult to track sales because you don't have this link, unique links, unless you put it in the bio, which is not ideal. So I will go later in terms of discussing like kind of like budget calculations of how I define budgets for any different campaigns. But yeah, like with Instagram, for sure, I'm seeing that there is like, I almost kind of feel that we got kind of spike in sales from this one campaign. There is not as many clicks to the unique URL, or the coupon code has only been used once or twice. But I know for sure that this influencer brought us more sales. It just, I cannot track them. And one of another reason for that is that very rarely people buy your product. People who've never heard of you buy your product right away, right? I think the benchmark statistic is like there is at least like 7 touch points with the customer before they actually make the purchase. So they can see the YouTube video or maybe see Instagram post and then search Google for Globin, and then the sale in the end will be attributed to something totally different. So I just, from my personal experience with influencer marketing, I would say don't limit yourself with influencer marketing just because, you know, you're not seeing as many direct sales right away. Be aware that there will be brand awareness benefit coming from this campaign.
Well, and so how do you evaluate? And I know you have the financial calculation that you do to figure out if it's worth investing in a certain influencer and their platform. But are there things outside of just the numbers that you look for when you are trying to figure out if somebody is going to be a good bet? Because, I mean, essentially that's what you're doing is, you know, you're kind of betting that this is going to turn out well, and you can't even necessarily track it because, like you said, so many people will see something on Instagram and then not take any action, but maybe weeks or months later, they'll remember you and go buy you by, you know, doing a brand query search in Google. And so how would you know that the campaign connected to that sale? So what do you look for to sort of, that makes you feel like, yeah, this is going to be a good fit for us?
So I have to say, so influencer marketing is very much, the search for the perfect blogger influencer is very much qualitative process than quantitative. There are middlemen, the same as with affiliates, middlemen companies, kind of platforms that connect brands to influencers. And we've tried a few of them. We've tried, you know, growth hacking, influencer marketing as well. But the only approach that really worked for us is just manually looking for perfect influencers, and there's hard to write a script for it. So the first step, I think, is to really know your customer. So I did personal interviews with our customers. We always do customer surveys every month. I very much pay attention to our Facebook community, so I know who our customer is and what they love. For example, they love like home decor, cooking, they love DIY, and most of them are mothers, things like that, right? So that's the first step, and it's like, okay, this is kind of influencers I want to be reaching. So I'm looking for mommy bloggers, but also who have kind of like this nice quality content, not deal websites. Even by looking at a blog, just like without taking any statistics, just by opening the homepage, I can tell you if it's a good bet or not a good bet for us. Because obviously it comes with experience, but also I know that our product is pretty expensive, right? So like the deal websites, couponing bloggers, they're not going to work for us. They're not going to attract the correct audience. So I'm looking for home decor bloggers, DIY bloggers. So that's the quality part. But next step is I check their Alexa ranking. Alexa, it's essentially, you can install it as a Chrome extension and tells you the traffic to the website that they get. So this is just the first step. Alexa ranking tells you the traffic to their website, but it doesn't tell you the quality of the traffic. So, for example, some deals and coupon bloggers, they would have a really great Alexa ranking. Typically, I'm looking for something less than 300,000 for the Alexa traffic rank. And for the traffic rank, the smaller it is, the better. So Google has number one traffic rank, right? So Alexa rank is the first thing to see, but then I also look at the comments on the blog post that this blogger has. Is there a genuine engagement on their content, right? Or is it just, you know, posting into midair and nobody's actually reading it? This tells me if there is a real community that this blogger has. Another way to check this kind of community feel is go to their Facebook page of the blog and see how many followers they have on Facebook. This is also not enough. Sometimes, you know, people will have 20,000 followers on Facebook, but there's like no comments, no likes, only like giveaway posts get like a lot of engagement. Again, I can clearly see that Alexa ranking and Facebook followers number doesn't tell me the full story and might not be worth investing into a campaign with this blogger. So I think these are the kind of the main key numbers that I'm looking for. With YouTube, it's like, you know, number of channel subscribers and average video views.
And then with Instagram, it's interesting to me that you first would check the Facebook when it's a blogger, but then some bloggers these days are almost primarily Instagram. They don't even update their sites anymore. So what do you like to see on Instagram?
Yeah, with Facebook, I think why I'm paying more attention to it, because we have been working on Facebook for a longer time, and I do know that our customers, at least the ones that we have right now, are mostly on Facebook. But you're completely right. For like different influencers have different strengths, right? There's some influencers, you know, it will be YouTubers, so YouTube is their primary channel, and maybe Instagram secondary. Other bloggers will have, especially the deal and coupon bloggers, they have Twitter with their biggest following. So yeah, even if Facebook is not the strongest strongest, especially if we're talking about ethical fashion, ethical consumption, definitely check their Instagram. It might be much stronger there. With Instagram, I would say 10,000 plus. That's what I was looking for before. But if qualitatively, it's a very strong fit. So for example, I know there's a lot of knitters, right? Etsy sellers who knit beautiful things, and they have really awesome Instagram content. And like, they're just an Etsy seller. They don't really have a blog, but they post a lot of pictures on Instagram. 7,000 to 8,000 followers, and like really good engagement, like 400, 500 likes on their photos. I would go for it just because it's such a perfect match with us, with Globin, because I know that our customers are knitters and crafters and crocheters. So it kind of, it's a balance between numbers and quality.
Okay, so all of that makes sense. And I want to do a quick time check with you because I know that we are sort of running over our time block. What is your time frame?
I still have at least around 12 minutes, I think, at least.
Perfect. Okay, I will keep it to 12. Let's go. Okay, so from here, I do want to talk about the calculation that you do to decide whether or not an ad is a good thing. But does it make sense for us to talk about Facebook ads before we do that?
We can quickly talk about Facebook ads, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, this, and for listeners, obviously Facebook ads, huge, huge topic. But Lisa has come up with a couple of key takeaways and things that she's learned. And I was thinking that those would be the most important things to call out here, because we could do an entire like month of episodes on Facebook. So you have found two things. Video is really important. And then why don't you tell us what you think that the top things we need to know are with Facebook?
Yeah, we are actually right now working with an agency called Adespresso. They're really good in terms of Facebook ads. You can have a concierge service with them. They're kind of helping us run Facebook ads, essentially. Ideally, of course, for everyone, if you can figure out Facebook ads yourself, definitely do it. It's a huge, huge source of sales for us, and so much potential there. Essentially, key benefits of Facebook, it's granular targeting. We share so much information about ourselves with Facebook. You can target by age, gender, location, interest, page likes, etc. But the secret weapon for you as a business is building lookalike audiences on Facebook ads. Essentially, it is if you have, let's say, 500 or 1,000 emails of your customers, or even website visitors, if you are capturing emails, you can input these emails into your Facebook ads manager platform, and Facebook would build a lookalike audience. So essentially, it will find people on Facebook who look like your customers, right? And then a separate lookalike audience will be a lookalike audience of your website visitors. So it makes targeting so much more powerful, and it makes your ads more relevant to the people these ads are served. And the main thing right now on Facebook is video. Video is absolutely king. Short 1 minute videos. Facebook is pushing it really hard. Facebook Lives are great to engage with your community. But for us as a company, our best performing ads are videos. Nothing could come closer to that. Like subscription boxes, you know, you unboxing videos are popular. Short engaging videos like tips and tricks, whatnot. Very short attention span. People don't listen to the sound of the video on Facebook. So always have the text overlay. Even if it looks ugly, it will still capture people much more than, you know, having no sound and no text overlay. And yeah, weird things work on Facebook. For us, we have to produce super high quality content just because of the nature of our product. But for other businesses, you know, super cheesy, cheap iPhone videos work. So a lot of testing. You have to be testing new campaigns and new audiences every single day.
Well, you just said so much in there that I'm like, I want to unpack all of it. And I was talking to somebody the other day about the importance of the email list for just strictly for sales and communicating with your audience. But you're bringing up a really great point, which is that you also want to have a really great list that is not full of halfway interested people, but is actually full of really engaged people, because you can use it for things like this.
Yeah. And another thing on Facebook, you can be retargeting people, right? You can be retargeting people who, you know, share their email with you, or you can be retargeting even people who watched your video. For example, you're pushing like a big brand video on Facebook, and you can literally target people who watch 75% of the video, which means they're very engaged and interested in your product. And the ROI there will be much higher than, you know, from cold traffic, because that's what it is for us.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's quickly before we go into the final questions that I always ask every guest at the end of the show, and then I'm very excited to ask you, can you walk me through this calculation that you do? Because I thought it was pretty interesting, and I imagine it takes some of the guesswork out of these decisions that might feel really qualitative. You have this equation that you use to try to figure mm-hmm. out if you should invest in a certain influencer or marketing opportunity.
Yeah, essentially, kind of the main thing that drives my decision making in terms of should I do this campaign or not, should I work with this influencer or not, is the CPA. It's a cost per acquisition. So how much money I can pay to anyone, how much money I can spend to acquire a customer. So let's say, for example, the CPA is, and CPA is very much influenced by lifetime value of a customer. So it will be very, very different for different businesses. So for example, let's take like a very, I think, let's just go through an example. I think it will be much easier to understand. If your business CPA is $10, right? So you are willing to pay this, for example, blogger $10 for every sale that they drive you. And they are asking, let's say, for $1,000 for this, you know, marketing campaign with them that they will do like a review of your product and a dedicated blog post about it, maybe send an email out to their a newsletter. So essentially, they're asking for $1,000 and your CPA is $10. So in order to reach this target CPA, cost per acquisition, this blogger has to drive you 100 sales, which is a lot. The next step is you have to realistically, objectively understand, is that real? Can the blogger drive you 100 sales? Most likely it won't. They won't be able to do that. So that's kind of like the very basic premise. And the way, how can you guesstimate how many sales a marketing campaign can drive you, kind of comes from experience. For just to give you another example, for example, from YouTube, you know, we had great advice for another subscription book company. For them, they were getting one sale per each 1,000 views on YouTube, right? So we started playing and we started working with YouTube influencers and getting sales. But for us, we were getting only one sale per 2,000 views. So the guesstimation part and understanding how many sales you can potentially get from any campaign, it only will come from experience or from hopefully from advice that other brands and people can give you. And yeah, usually even if it's a huge blogger, again, direct sales that you can measure right away, it will be very, very hard to get more than 10 sales, even from a real good blogger. So that's why it's so hard to justify this flat fees. And that's why it's so important to try to negotiate lower fees or some kind of affiliate partnerships, things like that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And for those listening, we will put that into a blog post so that you can go and look at it if you'd like to know more. And everything that Lisa has mentioned, we will also capture in the show notes for this episode that will be on thespiritof608.com, so you can find all this great information. So as we're closing out the conversation, love to know if you have any tech tools, apps, books, or resources that have helped you kick ass in your day-to-day life that you think would help Fest founders kick more ass in their day-to-day lives.
Of course. Yeah, I'm not super techie, but like as I'm listening to your show, I'm definitely will try Calendly eventually. But my favorite tool, and I've heard about it a couple of years ago, is called Rapportive. Have you heard of it?
Well, you know what? I've heard of it because of you, because you posted about it in the Spirit of 60 Facebook group, and then I started using it and I love it.
Isn't it awesome? Yeah, so essentially it's kind of an add-on or extension for Gmail, which is cool when you're emailing people through your Gmail. It pulls up their LinkedIn information and you kind of see the face of the person, you know, their email, where they're based and kind of their position. And for me, it was even super useful when I was, for example, doing customer support, right, and replying to people through Gmail, and I was able to see who our customers are. You know, just this kind of qualitative pieces and like, oh, our customers, they love one, or they live in New York and she's like a professor there, or she has her own blog, right? It's kind of very easy way to, you know, get qualitative information from whoever you're communicating with.
You know how much I like to think about the press angle with all this stuff. And that is the thing that I've seen it be so cool for, is that if you're emailing a journalist, you're like, oh, you write for all these publications and maybe they've posted their most recent story and you can comment on it quickly. So I was really excited when you alerted me to that cool tool. So thanks for telling everybody listening to the show about it. Now, you and I have not hung out in person yet, but if we were to hang out all day, what do you think I would end up absolutely loving about you and what would drive me insane?
I think as a lot of your guests kind of say, it's almost like all the time. It's the same thing. You kind of like and hate. But I think high energy, I would say, and very kind of disorganized. So I'm always like doing the running from meeting to meeting, call to call. So depending of what you prefer, you know, if you're a super organized person, it would probably drive you insane. But if you like relax and kind of go with the flow person, you will love it. Because, you know, usually if I don't have meetings or stuff, I'm like, sure, yeah, let's do it. Let's do that. You know, very kind of up and go.
Well, just from my interaction with you thus far, I've noticed you're super responsive. Like, I could send you an email and you pretty much get back to me within like an hour or two, which is not necessarily the norm. You're like on top of it. So I'm surprised to hear you say that you're disorganized, because it does not seem that way at all. If you had to print a phrase or a motto on a t-shirt and wear it for the next 7 days, what would it be?
Yeah, I was thinking about this for the last couple of weeks, and I think it would be do good fearlessly.
Lovely. I love that. That's wonderful. So I always close out by asking guests if you have a question you'd like to ask me, anything silly or serious, and I promise to give you an honest answer.
Yeah, I think I listened to a few of your episodes and it sounded like you did have like a subscription from some other company. So, have you tried any subscription boxes, or what's your favorite subscription?
Yeah, so I subscribe to Roxbox.
Roxbox. Yeah, that's the episode I heard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I really like them. They kind of got me hooked. I actually started out, was first interacting with the brand because I was writing about them. As a, you know, mm-hmm. they pitched me and I wrote a story and then they gave me a code and I tried it and ugh. And I, but I've also tried, and I just keep doing it because it just makes sense for me. But I also have tried La Tote before. I did that for a bit and then I stopped because the clothes are just not, it's just really not my, not in my sort of strike zone exactly, but I do have a lot of respect for what they do. And I'm trying to think if I've tried any others. I actually, you know what I just subscribed to? Madison Reed, the hair color. I love
the
that
hair
stuff.
Color. Oh, really? Wow. I haven't heard of them.
Yeah, no, they're in San Francisco. You should check them out. But I'm a hair color freak. I love dyeing my hair. I dye it darker mm-hmm. than it actually is. So yeah, I got sick of having to go online and order it. And now it'll just show up. And I subscribe to a bunch of stuff via Amazon that's just regular household stuff. So yeah, total subscription fan of the model and have used it in a couple of different ways, practical and then also fun in my life.
Cool. Yeah, good to know.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge with us and your story. And if people want to keep up with you and Globin and all the great stuff you have coming out this year, what's the best way for them to connect with you online?
So the website is called globein.com, globein.com. Facebook community is pretty big. It's facebook.com/globein. Our Instagram is @globein_world. And I would say these are the best kind of ways to connect with us. If you want to drop us a note asking us questions about the product, deliveries, things like that, it's support@globein.com. We have pretty good customer support team. And yeah, if you want to connect with me personally, I am on Instagram and Twitter @lithaca, LITHACA.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Lorraine. Bye.
Done and done. I hope you enjoyed the chat with Lisa. I know I got a lot out of it. I'm going to go back and listen to it again because I want to do some of the stuff that she's talking about in the future. As I'm growing the spirit of 608 and Presto, I've basically done like no marketing to speak of other than, you know, just like telling people about the show and everything else. And, you know, at some point I want to get more strategic about marketing, but I really want to understand my strategy first. So learning from people like Lisa has been super helpful. Big thanks to her for coming on and just like telling us what her company does. A lot of people like to keep that stuff close to the vest. And she, you know, did say to me, hey, like I want to help Fest founders. So we love people like that around here. Another thing I love is watching Fest founders get media attention. And it's really one of the cornerstones of my personal diabolical mission to have more ethical fashion and more ethical businesses in general reach more people, because I really view the visibility factor is a major problem in these brands growing. I sat on the journalism side for so long watching people not get the press coverage that other companies were getting simply because they just didn't have the same level of outreach happening for one reason or another, whether it was, you know, this budget kind of based reasons or whether they weren't prioritizing it for other reasons. And so I like to try to bring you pieces of strategy when I can. I shared this recently in the Spirit of 608 Facebook group, which you can find by visiting the Spirit of 608 or Prestope blogs at spiritof608.com or prestope.com. And here's what it is. If you are somebody who is trying to get the word out about your brand, especially if you are doing it yourself and you're not working with an agency or a PR firm who's pushing out pitches about you all the time, you need to try this tactic. Becoming a guest contributor, guest blogger, or occasional writer for other websites and publications. And I often say that to people and they're like, oh yeah, totally. Got it. But how? And like, where am I going to do this? And okay, so maybe there's a publication I want to write for, but like, how do I get them to let me do it? And the good news is there's never been a bigger hunger and thirst and need and just ravenous appetite out there on the digital internets for content. And so there are so many opportunities to create content. It could also be maybe non-written content. There's a lot of ways to contribute illustrations and videos and other types of multimedia content that people are going to want to consume and have it really showcase you and your brand personality and your message without directly selling. And that's the benefit, is that it raises awareness, but you're not directly selling. And also there are side benefits that are, you know, like related to SEO and getting links back to your website and having new things to promote on social media that, again, are not directly selling, but instead are valuable to your community and audience. So to help you figure out how to start contributing as a guest writer or content creator of some kind to online news sites and blogs and places like that, I created a post called 5 Ways to Write for Online Publications, and it is now up on the Prestope blog at prestope.com/blog. And if you are a Prestope member, you will actually get access to 17, and the list is growing, but it's currently 17 places that you can click through and submit your work to right now. We've got all the submission guidelines, links to the contact information for people that want to do that and who are members of the site. But if you're not a member of the site, you still get in that post a walkthrough of 5 different strategies. And, you know, I challenge you, if you look at those 5, just quickly go through, set aside 15 minutes, just skim right through it. Think of the things that you know you can write about with confidence. Pick one of them. Look at those 5 strategies and say, you know what? I think this one is the best one for my idea. Tell yourself you're going to do it. If you know of a publication that would be a great target, contact them. Get in touch. And if you don't, come into the Spirit of 608 Facebook group. You can request to join on the spiritof608.com blog in the sidebar. And come in there. Tell us. Like, I want to write a post for somebody. And who do you think I should reach out to? And we'll help you. I'll help you. I'll help you figure it out if you make the effort. So wanted to leave you with that thought. You got to put the work in to get the word out. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to this point in the show. If you want to help us out, you can always subscribe, rate, and review the show in iTunes. It makes a big, big difference in how many people we're able to reach. And I always appreciate every single rating and review that we get. It's nice to see them ticking up. So thanks if you've already done that. You rock. And I hope you'll join me next time for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call it fast, and it's the future.